We live in a world where you can find yoga and you can find inner peace, and then you can take it with you. You can take it off the mat, you can take it out of your meditation, and you can live it. Welcome to the Let It Flow podcast, a place where we discuss the ancient wisdom of holistic health, yoga, and Ayurveda in a modern-day context to help you align mind, body, spirit, and shine as your brightest self. I'm your host, Taryn, for this week's solo episode. I am so grateful to share this moment with you. Let's dive within. On today's episode, we dive into what is yoga really. We begin by talking about what is yoga. Where does the word itself come from? Where does the practice come from? What's the history behind it? I explain step by step, briefly going over each of the 8 limbs of the Yoga Sutras, which is the oldest written text on yoga, and I tell you what outlines Patanjali, the author, gave us to find yoga in our lives. Then we talk a little bit about physical yoga, which is the yoga that you're likely already at least a bit familiar with, or you've probably at least heard of. Physical yoga is definitely the most popular in Western countries today. And we talk about why that is, where that comes from, and we dive into the inner workings of physical yoga and how it helps us to find that essential union and connection. We also talk a little bit about the difference between yoga and stretching in sports and other forms of physical activity. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Let's dive within. Before we dive in to what yoga is, I want to begin this podcast with a question. I invite you to grab a pen and a notebook if that's accessible to you, maybe a journal. You can write it on your phone or simply think about it. But I'm going to ask you a question, and I'd like for you to truly answer it from within. What is yoga? The reason that I start this podcast by asking you what yoga is, really what yoga is a connection with the inner self. And while yoga practice provides us with a lot of different ways to find our truth, to find happiness, to find love and connection and joy, and ultimately to unite all the different parts of ourselves, the practice of yoga honors the fact that everybody's journey will look different. And so before we begin and I tell you what yoga is, although I've studied a lot of yoga and I've gained a lot of wisdom and insight from other people, I'm still telling you this through my own lens. And although I work every day to do so without bias, without any sort of opinion, it ultimately will sound different coming from me than it will from yourself. At the end of this podcast, I'll give you another opportunity to reflect on the question and see if your answer has changed or maybe stayed exactly the same. I find that when I ask myself, what is yoga, I come up with a different answer every single time. And that's the beauty of this practice. But really, what is yoga? Let's get into it. Yoga comes from ancient India. Nobody really knows how old the practice of yoga is because the very first written text that came from humanity mentions yoga. But before that, there is speculation that yoga was practiced for 10, 12, maybe even 15,000 years before people knew how to write. Many sages and yogis will tell you that yoga is as old as humanity. But the word yoga comes from the root word yuj, which is a verb in the Sanskrit language. Sanskrit is the language of ancient India and might be familiar to you if you've ever had any experience with yoga, of course, but also with Hinduism and Buddhism, because both of them reference sacred texts that were written in the language Sanskrit. So the word yuj, which is where the word yoga is derived from, means to yoke, essentially to corral. But the more modern interpretation, and definitely the most widely accepted interpretation today, is that yoga means union. That can mean a lot of things. That can mean almost anything if you really think about it. And that almost sounds overwhelming at first, union. But really, the core focus, at least at the beginning of yoga, is to find mind, body, and spirit union, connection. Because ultimately, each of us as individual people, we are a whole self. Every part of us is working together in union. And when we have these divisions between our body and our mind, when we have divisions between our soul, our spirit, our connection, and the way that we think, or even any other division that we might find, it manifests as unhappiness, illness, a lack of connection, a lack of passion, a lack of drive, conflict with people in your life, even the ones that you love. And really, this can all be directed back to a source, which is that there is a disconnect. So union, to unite mind, body, and spirit, means to live in perfect harmony with the self. And with this harmony, we can find a connection and a balance with the outside world too. So it's really common today that when people think of yoga, they think of a yoga class like you would take in the Western world, which is very much based on physical movement and often really emphasizes working out. And while this does come from ancient yoga practice, ancient India, this is actually only one step of the yoga process, and it's not even the end goal. So while movement is a part of it, and as a yoga teacher, I teach yoga classes, and I personally practice, and I fully recognize that moving, physical yoga poses, which are called yoga asanas, are definitely a way to find this connection, but it's not the end goal. Anything that we do here with any sort of effort, ultimately, is just bringing us closer to the goal. But the idea is that when we find our yoga, we find something that we no longer have to try for at all, because everything makes sense, because everything is united. So this also correlates with the idea of oneness, that we all come from the same source, because yoga tells us that on the inside, all of us are the same, because it's the same beautiful, loving, compassionate, and all-encompassing, omnipresent consciousness that runs through everything in the universe. Okay, that's a lot. Let's back up a little bit. Yoga means to unite. The first written mention of yoga is about 5,000 years old and comes from the Rig Veda and the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. The Yoga Sutras of Patanjali are the most widely known and probably the most widely regarded yoga text. The Yoga Sutras give us essentially what I like to think of as a textbook explanation of how to find yoga. Patanjali says that there's 8 steps in yoga practice, and that if you do these 8 steps in the way that he lists, you will inevitably find your yoga, and you will find this union and connection and spiritual awareness. So this is often considered to be kind of an outdated approach, but this is the roots of where the practice comes from, and much of it is still referenced today. I'll make a future episode on the 8 limbs of the Yoga Sutras, but essentially, in a nutshell, what he says is that we must first develop awareness of ourselves and our behaviors in the world, how we interact, how we talk to ourselves, and how we take care of our bodies, just in a very physical way. Then we need to become mindful of our interactions with others, the way that we treat the people around us, the way that we speak, also the relationships that we choose to nurture and the ones that we don't, the way we choose to spend our time creating, doing, working in the external world. And it's neither good nor bad, but the third limb is the one that the Western interpretation of yoga has really taken and run with. And this is asana. So this is physical poses. And if you think of it from Patanjali's perspective, in theory, if you're supposed to go from one level to another, then physical poses is only level 3. But there's 8 steps. And so physical poses is where we start to find the stillness and the connection. In doing yoga asana, which there are many books and many ancient texts which mention specific yoga poses, and these are still what we use today. If you've taken a yoga class, you'll notice that all of the poses end in the word asana, which means pose. So, for example, tree pose, which you might be familiar with, is called vrikshasana. Vriksha, tree, asana, pose. You may know warrior 2 pose, virabhadrasana 2, Virabhadra is actually the name of a warrior that's mentioned in another one of ancient India's sacred texts, Asana pose. So you're essentially recreating the energy of that mythology, that story, through your pose and calling in that energy. So there's a lot more to it than just a workout. But when yoga asana began in ancient India, it is worth mentioning that it was actually only available to men. And this right here kind of begins to explain why there was an 8-step process, because it was very, very a black and white approach. But in ancient India, they used to use yoga asana so that monks, the young boys who were training to be monks, could get out their energy so they could sit still long enough to meditate and to begin their spiritual work. And that really is the core of asana. It's about finding a very, very physical connection between how can I calm my mind, how can I breathe and connect with my spirit, and how can I use this awareness to mindfully put my body in certain shapes and develop myself, my strength, my connection, my self-awareness, my coordination. And after you've done that, then it becomes more conceptual. So once you've done the poses and you've found physical strength and you've started to connect, thinking things like, put both your hands on the ground, step your feet back, lift your hips, oh, that's downward facing dog, and knowing how to tell your body to do that, then you can start to focus on stilling the mind, stilling the body, and beginning to work towards that yoga. The fourth limb is called pranayama, and this is breath. This is the limb where we start to transcend the physical world, because breath is the most elusive of the qualities. We're moving air in and out of our body. So pranayama, prana is actually life force, and it's beautiful because yoga tells us that there's no difference at all between the air that we breathe and the life force that runs through us. Even things like food and water, while they contain prana or life force energy, they aren't the same as life. Breath is life, which makes sense because if you think about it, you can stop eating. There are people actually who fast for a long time, but any person can stop eating for 2 days and they'll be okay once they eat again. If someone stops drinking water for 2 days, they will be okay. And obviously this will have negative repercussions on our health. But if somebody stops breathing for 2 minutes, they might die. If somebody stops breathing for 20 minutes, any person, they will die. And so this right here explains the intimacy between breath and life force and vitality and existence. So that's the fourth stage, starting to become aware of the breath. There's lots of different pranayamas, which are different forms of breath work, lots of different things that provide us with so many different benefits. You can find pranayamas for heating up your body, for cooling down the body, for igniting your digestion, for linking the left and right side of your brain so that you have optimal brain function. These are even things I do certain pranayamas before I go to school or before I have a difficult phone call with somebody, because pranayama immediately gives us a link between our life force, truth, existence, and our mind. And the mind is the thing that tends to run wild. And ultimately, as beautiful as it is, it's the thing that creates a lot of the problems and the drama and the pain that we have in our lives. So with the pranayama, we are uniting life force with the mind and with the body. The fifth stage is where we cross over into the more conceptual. So it no longer has to do with the body at all. And this is actually called pratyahara. This is the stage where you start to withdraw the senses. And at this point, you've found a comfortable seat. Your body is still. Your spine is straight. You're in meditative position with your legs crossed. And again, I'm referencing the Yoga Sutras. I'm not telling you how you need to do it. But this is what the roots of yoga tells us we need to do to find this connection. So you're in the comfortable seated position, and this is when you start to go inside and you withdraw the senses. You try to unhinge your mind and your awareness from things like, there's a fly buzzing around my head and I can hear it and it's bothering me and it just landed on my forehead and I'm frustrated and bored. This is where we stop noticing, It's really cold in here. This is even where we stop noticing. I've been sitting still for 20 minutes and my back is killing me. We withdraw from the physical self. And that's not saying that the physical self is no longer honored, but that's saying that the external environment no longer, for that time, gets to be in charge of the mind. And so with this, we take the mind and we can move on to the sixth stage. Now that the external world is no longer distracting, that doesn't mean that you've closed all the windows and you've readjusted your seat. It means that you have taken yourself out of a place of concern about those things, which is very uncomfortable at first, but there is a point where you cross over and you can stop thinking about that while you meditate and while you do yoga. So then we have the sixth stage, and this is the stage Dharana or Dharana. And this is the stage where we essentially find what Patanjali calls one-pointed focus. You start to focus your thoughts on consciousness, on the true self, on soul. And there's different ways that people like to connect with this. Some people like the word God, other people call it universe. But whatever this is, the higher power, this is when you focus on it, but you stay present with yourself. You don't focus on something that exists far beyond you, but you allow this awareness of consciousness, of God, source, universe, whatever you call it, you let this wash over you and you start to find it inside. This is the point where you can start to use what are called mantras, which are essentially deliberate sounds that yoga has offered. Most of them are in Sanskrit, even the ones we still use Sanskrit mantras today. And that's because the mantras were designed with so much intention that each syllable is believed to hold the exact energetic vibration of the meaning of the word itself. So with mantra, we are literally bringing our thoughts to the vibration of the mantras, which the ones that are used in meditation all have to do with calling in a higher power, finding a connection, finding joy and bliss. So they're all very positive things. And so when we start to use mantra, all we do is repeat this in the mind. And this also gives us something to focus on because the mantra reflects that consciousness. But it really, again, is a tool, but it's not the end goal. So mantras give us a place to go instead of thinking, how do I sit here and just think about becoming the universe? Because that's going to create more thoughts. I could sit there and think about that all day and probably not end up meditating at all. But when we use mantra, we're repeating the same thing over and over again. So we've actually found one point, one single thing that is not moving or changing, one truth to focus on. So then you transcend that and go to the seventh limb, which is Dhyana. This is essentially where meditation begins. This is where mantra, focus, any sort of effort, controlling the mind falls away, and there's just this peaceful awareness and understanding. This is where you begin to transcend the self, but with full love and compassion for the person that you are still. And this is where we begin to find that connection. Everything begins to align, but not in the mind, in a deeper kind of awareness where we see that we are whole. And we are united. And the true self that we know is in there, that's the self that is us. But the only thing that has kept us from being and living this true self every single day is illusion, is distraction, is what they call Maya in Sanskrit, which literally means illusion. That's the physical world. But the physical world is only illusion when we look at it as an obstacle, or we look at it as something to be won or be gained. When we start to see the world as I win, you lose, or as the exact opposite, I feel like I'm losing, life is hard, or even as a conversation with somebody, we say, this is a difficult conversation, this is standing in the way of this, I'm busy, all of those things. That is what makes up illusion. So the physical world itself is not bad, is not illusion, but the mind which creates separation instead of union, that's the illusion. And so at the seventh stage, illusion falls away and we understand and we see. And that's clarity. The last stage of yoga is called samadhi. And this is comparable to what most people have heard of, nirvana. Nirvana comes more from Buddhism, and samadhi is a little more intimately related with the practice of Hinduism, but it's the same concept. It's the place of transcending time and space, transcending the physical self, and finding enlightenment, finding bliss. To achieve samadhi, everything else essentially has to fall into place, but it's not something that's out of touch for any of us ever. In a moment, you can find samadhi. And so this is when we start to break away from the Yoga Sutras. That's the roots of yoga, that's where it came from, but our world today has a lot more people, is a lot more connected and truly united, and we understand that you can't do things like, say, only men can practice yoga, because that right there is hypocritical if the goal of yoga is union. So the world today has this really, really beautiful multidimensional approach to what yoga is. We take that and it has evolved, it has grown, it has expanded, just like the universe is constantly expanding in new creation and new energy, and everything is changing force, changing shape. Yoga has completely evolved and expanded past that viewpoint. However, Patanjali's Yoga Sutras are still referenced because all of the advice and tips, and even the way he explains what yoga is, still proves very, very valuable to most people, to yogis who find value in the practice. Most yogis at least align with something that Patanjali says, because that's where yoga comes from. So, yoga today is not like that. We mostly take a physical approach, and that is because asana is, well, it's a workout, and our world is a world that is learning a lot of lessons right now. And unfortunately, most of the emphasis is placed on external. To use yoga and find union is great, but the thing that draws most people to it, just because of the distraction, of the illusion that we need to look a certain way, or even that we need to exercise a certain amount to be happy, that draws people to physical practice because, wow, that's great that you can find a spiritual connection, but a lot of people really, really do feel a need to work out. So that's what pulls them in. They see photos of people, videos of people with perfect, in their, what they consider to be perfect bodies, or doing beautiful poses, super flexible, super strong, standing on their hands, doing the splits, holding their leg in the air. And it's beautiful. That's the external appearance of yoga, though. And the goal of yoga, again, is to find the true self inside. Personally, my opinion, and the way that I've connected with the practice, is that that's perfect. There's nothing wrong with us being a totally asana-focused society. The fact that people are being drawn to yoga, even if it is because originally they want to work out, hey, that's why I started yoga. The fact that anyone is drawn to yoga means that people are going towards the practice that will set their soul free. And that, to me, that's perfect. That's beautiful. That's exactly where we're supposed to be going. So, I teach asana, and I practice asana every day, but it actually wasn't until I took my teacher training that I began to understand why it works so well. I never got it. Why can't I stop doing yoga, even on days when I don't want to do anything else? Yoga always feels good. Why? And there's such a why. Because yoga is different than stretching and exercise, because yoga is focused on the breath, is focused on linking mind and body, and essentially finding spirit and source eventually and doing that process. But it's focused on linking mind and body. It's focusing on honoring where you are. There's no perfect yoga pose. There's no competition. In fact, my favorite classes I've ever taken as a student have been ones where I've had my eyes closed 95% of the class because I'm inside. And those are always when I leave feeling the most blissful and happy. Because it really isn't about the external world, and it's not about what your body looks like. It's about how you feel. And with that said, yoga is awesome because we were given beautiful wisdom. We were given things like sun salutations, which are a sequence of poses that you do that warm up your body and prepare your body for other poses. And those have been tried and tested by yogis and sages and by beginners and by people like me who've just kind of found yoga and fell in love and kept doing it. It's been tested by everyone, and it just seems to be truth because it gives everyone what they're looking for, and so that stays. I'm trained in vinyasa yoga, but of asana, of the yoga classes you can take, there's lots of different branches, and that could be many different podcast episodes, but of the physical types of yoga, vinyasa, which is what I teach, is what you'll find at most yoga studios in the West, in the United States and other Western countries. And vinyasa classes are always different, but they do reference a standard universal format. They use the same poses. The teacher will probably take a lot of the poses and make variations, but it's all based on the same core gift of wisdom and insight and poses, and even what's called krama, which is the order of the poses, because it's actually been proven, and now science is starting to prove it as well when they're hooking people up to brain scanners while they practice yoga. But it's been proven through all the people practicing that there are certain orders of poses that just make people feel better. There are certain key points in the body that you, if you stretch them all, if you give them all a chance to release and be strengthened or be extended flexibility, whatever, if you focus on these areas, you will leave class feeling good. And again, not everyone is the same, but the human body and people in general, we're a lot more similar than we often think we are. So there is a sequence of poses that work for a lot of people. And this is why there is yoga teacher training. This is why yoga classes are a thing and it's not just a stretching class. So, differences between yoga and stretching, well, the breath, but also a purpose and intention. Yoga, when we stretch and practice and move our bodies, the end goal is something else, which I just described quite a bit, but it's something much bigger and much more loving and compassionate than just moving. There isn't a goal of stretching, of yoga practice, but really it's just a physical manifestation of feeling good, which is what yoga is. It's unbounded bliss, right? So it's, well, I have this body, why don't I bring that joy into my body by doing yoga? It keeps us healthy, but the health, the catalyst for health in the first place, the thing that creates health is having a body that is in harmony with itself, with the mind, with energy, and that is working as a cohesive unit. If one cell decides that it wants to go off and do its own thing and it doesn't want to be a part of the whole anymore, we call that cancer. The body works together and it communicates. The whole thing is in constant communication because it's one. And so it helps us find that unity. It also isn't about improving the physical self. Yoga practice honors the fact that we came in to the class perfect, exactly as we were, and all we need to do is sometimes reconnect with the person that we are, the true self on the inside. But ultimately, we already have what we need. We don't need to be more fit. We don't need to be more strong. We don't need to lose weight. None of that needs to happen. If that's a side effect of yoga, which the things that will lead you to have a more desirable body or to have better health will ultimately come through yoga, because yoga is about aligning everything towards your brightest and best self. But that's not the goal. The goal is beyond that, and that's just a happy side effect. Yoga is different than sports, too. Sports have a ball. Sports have equipment. Sports say you need to kick the ball into the goal, and then you will have achieved it. And then, boom, you have a point, and it's done. And somebody wins and loses. Even gymnastics, while it's an individual sport, says we're going to look at you and watch you very, very closely every movement and then give you a score based on that, and that will determine how good you are at the sport. Yoga is the exact opposite. While we can use props and stuff to improve our practice, we don't need anything when you get to a yoga class. One of my favorite things to say to students when they come to yoga is, everything that you need for this practice is within the four corners of your mat. And that's so true. There's nothing external needed. There's no team. There's no team that you'll be letting down if you don't kick the ball into the goal. The only thing that could possibly happen in yoga is that you find a deeper connection with yourself. Nobody loses. So that's a bit of an overview of yoga philosophy, where it came from, what it looks like in the modern world. But really, some of the benefits of yoga is finding joy in everything. And I talk a lot about living your yoga. And I understand that that can be kind of a confusing concept. It might be like, well, isn't yoga just doing those poses? And yes, that is yoga. But if yoga is union, then yoga is everything. And if yoga helps us find the true self, well, that true self is bliss and joy and wants nothing more and nothing less than for you to live in pure joy and bliss here in the physical world. So when we find that connection to the true self and we start to live our lives based on that, then we are able to find that connection, and naturally we will go towards the things that feed our higher self, that feed the future that we want to create, because we're able to see past the illusion and live with the soul, the heart. And yoga helps us connect to other people, because at the end of the day, we find that, an analogy I really love actually is, we all have an ocean inside of us. And when we have a lot of emotions, when we're sick, when we're in pain, when we're fighting with someone, when there's too much sensory input, like we're in a crowded place and there's noise and people are pressing up against you, or even if we're feeling any sort of stress, our ocean is rocky. It's like there's waves and everything's kind of crashing and things are moving around and there's lots of noise and it's just a little overwhelming. But as we start to tap into the practice of yoga, then we can slowly but surely start to still this ocean. And as the ocean becomes still, we can look and we can see clearly deeper and deeper and deeper into the ocean. And eventually, once we fully embody the connection, we can see the face at the bottom of the ocean, at the very core of our soul, of our insides. And that is what I like to imagine. That face is the soul. That's the true self. And when we see that face, truth becomes totally clear, because what is real is still there and always will be. And what wasn't real will fall away, will fade away, will stop crashing and creating waves and distractions. And so, in a very real and tangible sense, when we find yoga, we're able to navigate the oceans of life much easier. Because when we have a relationship with our true self, with truth, with love, then we can look around and see that, and we will naturally gravitate towards things that are in alignment. There's a whole energy component to yoga, which I will talk about in future episodes, but even energetically, it's believed, and quantum physics is proving over and over again with some fascinating insights lately, that everything is energy, even at the smallest level. Atoms, electrons, protons, quark, all of it, none of it is still. And in fact, up to 90%, most of it is empty space. Nothing is solid, nothing is stuck, nothing is static. Everything is moving and changing and vibrating. And so everything is energy. And if we think of a frequency, a wavelength, energy naturally wants to find energy that resonates with it, because two resonant energy frequencies, if you imagine like an energy wave, like an amplitude, When they find each other, they amplify. And so then we get into what Alana beautifully mentioned in her podcast, Law of Attraction. We get into aligning our energy on every level of ourselves, just aligning our overall energy of being with the life we want and the things that will help us live our best lives. And so when I say live your yoga, it's about finding the clarity, seeing that soul, recognizing the beauty and the love that runs through everything, and then taking that with you. Because we live in a time of abundance, and we often get distracted and can't see it. But we no longer live in the day where to find yoga, you have to be a monk, never get married, sit in a cave, and meditate for 20 hours a day, and not really eat any food. There's no monkhood today that is the single path to enlightenment. We live in a world where you can find yoga and you can find inner peace, and then you can take it with you. You can take it off the mat, you can take it out of your meditation, and you can live it. Because we're whole beings. We're not meant to sit and meditate unless that truly is what our body wants, which lots of times is not. We don't want to sit still, we want to move. So we can. And we can let ourselves do it, but we can find this yoga and take it with us. So I went over a lot today, but we talked about the roots of yoga, Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, the evolution of yoga, and more of the Western interpretation, which is very focused on asana. And we talked a little bit about vinyasa yoga in particular, which is a sequence of poses which are oftentimes very modified, but the same core sequence that allows us to find this union and just to find a good feeling in the body, in the mind, and in the spirit. And we talked a lot about the true self and finding clarity within and finding the union. I will leave you with a closing thought, but I want it to be your thought. So if you still have that notebook and piece of paper out and nearby, I invite you to pull it out, take out your phone, or maybe just sit with it and think about it. And answer the question, what is yoga? And now, once you've written your answer and you feel connected and it feels aligned in your heart, close your eyes and just take a deep breath with me. Inhaling, feeling the air fill up your lungs, fill up your whole body all the way down to your toes, your fingertips, the crown of your head. And then exhale. Deep breath out. And let it all go. Feel the flow of prana, life force moving in and out. And to breathe and to exist, that's the only thing that you ever need to do. Thank you for listening to today's podcast episode about what is yoga. If you have any questions or any topics that you'd like further explanation or to dive a little deeper into, please feel free to reach out to me or reach out to us. We have our contact information down below. I would love to hear your thoughts and feedback. I hope that this helped you begin to find that inner union and that some of this resonated with you, because it really isn't any sort of belief system at all. It's just reminding that you're already perfect and you're already love. And that's really all there ever is. That's kind of what we're doing here anyways, right? So there it is. What is yoga? Thank you for listening. Thank you for being present. And the teacher in me honors and recognizes the teacher in you. Namaste. Any person can also stop drinking for 2 waters. I almost want to leave that in.